Welcome to Mastering Logical Fallacies, the online course. This is the audio version of the online course presented at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. For the complete learning experience, including multimedia presentations, quizzes, assignments, peer-to-peer discussion, instructor interaction, and more, enroll as a student at MasteringLogicalFallacies.com. My name is Beau Bennett, and I am your instructor for this course. In this lesson, we're going to be talking about the argument from ignorance, and we're devoting an entire lesson to this because it is so huge. It's so huge in its implications and its usage out there, and how people throw out this fallacy all the time. So I thought we would devote an entire lesson to it. Also, what I want to do is I really want to break this down and get into a lot of the little arguments or details that are kind of embedded within this fallacy itself. And the first thing I want to do is start with this idea or this question, this big question that goes something like this: is absence of evidence evidence of absence? And let's break that down. Is absence of evidence, is not finding any evidence for something, is that evidence of that something not actually existing? This is usually applied to supernatural beings, whether it be God, fairies, gnomes, Bigfoot, or anything along those lines. There's no clear answer to this question in terms of, we can't just look at the question itself and then determine if it's fallacious or if it's unreasonable. We have to look at the context and what we're actually talking about. And to give you an example, let's apply this to Bigfoot. Is absence of evidence evidence of absence when it comes to Bigfoot? Well, Bigfoot is not generally known to be a supernatural being. Bigfoot is supposed to be just another animal or mammal or whatever the thing is, but it's supposed to exist in the natural world, and he's supposed to be walking somewhere around Oregon and Washington State, and he's got big feet and a lot of hair. So it would stand to reason that if we find no evidence of him whatsoever, considering all of the sightings and considering how he would have to, if there is a line of big feet, if you want to call them that, the plural of Bigfoot, then there would be multiple Bigfoots, big feet, all around, and we just don't see that. So the whole idea of Bigfoot actually existing is kind of silly, based on the absence of the evidence. So in that case, it does make sense because it's something that we would expect to find if such a claim were true. Now, if somebody is talking about a non-involved deistic type of God, like a supreme being who doesn't tinker in people's lives or get involved in the world. Maybe this God started the universe and kicked everything off who knows how many years, eons ago. Then to say that there is absence of his evidence doesn't really, absence of evidence leads to evidence of absence. That doesn't really make sense, because what evidence are we actually looking for? There's no evidence that this claim could actually leave in the natural world that could help us to substantiate this claim that such a being were to exist. So to say that there is no evidence for his existence means that his existence is less probable. That would be fallacious, because nobody is making the claim that this God does leave any kind of evidence. So we have to rule that out and look for another line of argumentation to try to prove or disprove this being, if such a being were to exist. So the bottom line, the answer to that question, is absence of evidence of absence? Well, the answer is it depends, and it depends on what you were actually looking for. Now let's talk about this whole idea of proving something. When we're talking about the argument from ignorance, the logical form goes something like this: X is true because you cannot prove that X is false. or the opposite, the inverse of that would be X is false because you cannot prove that X is true. Well, what does it mean to prove something? And generally, when we're talking about argumentation, debate, and logic, critical thinking, I personally try to avoid the word prove, because unless we're talking about deductive logical arguments, or if we're talking about mathematical proofs, which we do not really discuss generally in logic and argumentation. So at a technical level, we're not talking about proofs. We're not talking about proving things. We're talking about evidence. We're talking about providing evidence for a claim. And of course, evidence exists on a scale. There's strong evidence and there's weak evidence. And then there's just evidence, and then there's the way that people interpret the evidence through their worldview lens. So some people may see evidence as incredibly strong, and others may see evidence as very weak. So that gets a little bit tricky as well. But when we're talking about the whole form of the argument itself, the whole form of the fallacy, and that's X is true because you cannot prove that X is false. No matter how you define proof or you define evidence, it's fallacious to assume the inverse based on the lack of evidence. The best we could do is we could say that because you can't prove X is true, therefore, we don't know anything about it. That is a rational conclusion. That is logical. A concept that feeds into this fallacy is the ability to, or I guess the lack of ability, to distinguish between a probability and something that's plausible, plausibility. Very often, people will cling on to a plausible story. That's, again, it just has to be plausible within their worldview. It doesn't have to be plausible from a scientific perspective or from a rational perspective, just within their worldview. And then within that worldview, if it's plausible, they will automatically, at an unconscious level, increase the probability of that being a true claim, as opposed to looking at probability strictly from a rational or a mathematical perspective. So let's talk about, for example, the origin of life. This is a perfect example where the argument from ignorance comes into play. We don't know how life began. So the best we could say, because we don't know how life began, therefore we don't know. We don't know anything. That's it. If somebody were to argue that you don't know how life began, therefore God did it, or therefore aliens did it, or any other reason, that is fallacious thinking. Now, somebody could argue that they believe that aliens created life or God created life, and they can argue for another reason, and they could go into their theology and talk about different things, but that would not be necessarily the argument from ignorance. It's only the argument from ignorance when they are saying because, and then going on to say because you don't have other evidence. And that's usually, it's a stance against science. When science doesn't have the answer, then they will fall back to conspiracy theories, they'll fall back to pseudoscience, they'll fall back to religious beliefs and so forth. And then and they may hold on to those beliefs until science comes up with an answer, and then they'll say, okay, well, I guess we'll go with the scientific answer. If you're lucky, they'll give into that. But if somebody has an existing belief in a story, then, like, for a worldview, a pre-existing worldview, let's say that somebody believes in this alien race that started life, and this alien race is highly involved in our culture, and they constantly interfere without us knowing, and this big conspiracy and so forth. If somebody works on that presupposition, then what they do is they build up this whole idea of plausibility in these different stories that they tell themselves in order to explain things that they don't understand. And that's where it becomes plausible, but it is far from being probable. But they might think that it's probable in their mind because of the assumptions that they hold to be true, because of the presuppositions they hold to be true, even though those presuppositions are not based on probability itself. And I know that this may get a little complex, but I just did want to throw that out there, just this whole idea of plausibility versus probability. Now, the last thing I wanted to talk about regarding the argument from ignorance is personality, because personality does play a big part in people using this fallacy and committing this fallacy. There have been studies that looked at people's lack of tolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty. And there are certainly people that are all over the scale on this one. There are people who are more tolerant to ambiguity when we don't know exactly what's going on, uncertainty. And there are people that are all the way on the other end who just cannot stand it. It's very disconcerting to them. And it makes them very uncomfortable not to know something. So what they do is they're more susceptible to buy into any story. Anything that tells a plausible story that could possibly answer their question. Whether it's true or not, it's not of a major concern. As long as they could buy into the plausibility of it, then they're comfortable. And this dissonance that they feel between not knowing something and their drive to know it, it starts to dissipate when they have this plausible story. So as you could imagine, if you look at two different groups, if you look at scientific analytical thinkers, critical thinkers, they are certainly way higher on the scale of being able to tolerate ambiguity and uncertainty. But there are people that are certainly more religious and consider themselves more spiritual. They are on the other side of the scale that aren't able to tolerate this kind of ambiguity. I think that's important to point out because we have to remember that we are very much influenced by both our environment and our biology and by our genetics. Now, I don't think this study got into the details, or any of these studies that were done, similar studies, got into any of the details of why exactly we aren't tolerant to uncertainty or ambiguity. It really comes down to a personality trait, and when we look at personality, the psychologists who study personalities still believe that about 50% of it, generally speaking, is due to our genetics and to our biology, and the other 50% is due to environment, and then, of course, the interaction between the two. So we just need to be more sympathetic to people who might be more likely to commit this kind of fallacy, and just remember that if you were in their exact position with their exact biology and you were brought up exactly the way that they were, then you would be committing the fallacy too. And, of course, that goes for all the fallacies. But it was worth mentioning.